Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, good evening, everybody, and happy Halloween, October 31st. Welcome to the Constitutionalist number 16. I'm one of your hosts, Jeremy Johnson, and we're going to talk about the 16th Amendment tonight, and I will introduce the other host here shortly, but I wanted to start the radio show off just a little bit differently tonight. Give you our guest call-in number. Maybe that'll help get a few callers in to discuss the 16th Amendment with us and share your thoughts and opinions. Again, put that phone number in your phone. Save it as the radio show. That same phone number is good for our Tuesday night, Wednesday night, Thursday night broadcasts, and sometimes I do a random show. Who God knows when I do it. But that radio or that number will always work. And that phone number is 516-387-1733. And when you get through, just make sure you press the number one. That lets my switchboard know that you got something to say. Again, that phone number is 516-387-1733. And press that number one. Let us know you want to talk or join the conversation. Anyway, again, it's Halloween, and I'm here with the other host of this show, the chair of the Constitutional Republic Party, Travis Bull Johnson. How are you doing tonight, my friend?
Oh, I'm doing good, man, doing good. Just ready to talk about the 16th Amendment tonight. It's an amendment that in libertarian circles, you keep on hearing people say this one of the first things they want to repeal is the 16th Amendment. And I don't think things would work out like they think it would if they did that, but we'll discuss that a little bit more.
Yeah, it's the 16th Amendment. It was passed in 1909, ratified in 1913, and Bull's going to give you guys an explanation of what the 16th Amendment actually reads. But I want you to keep in mind, it was ratified in 1913, early on in the year. I want to say March or April, sometime in that neck of the woods. But also keep in mind that the Federal Reserve was put into place later on in that year of 1913, November, I believe it was. So just keep that in mind. You can connect the dots a little bit, so to speak. So with that being said, why don't we just go right back to Travis, and Travis, go ahead and start him off with the 16th Amendment.
All right. The 16th Amendment reads, the Congress shall have the power to lay and collect taxes on incomes from whatever source derived without apportionment among the several states and without regard to any census or enumeration. It's kind of interesting the way that is specifically worded when it talks about apportionment, census, or enumeration. And the reason for this is the Constitution of the United States initially prohibited the federal government from directly taxing its citizens. Now, when I say directly taxing, I mean they could not say, okay, everybody who has, we're going to take 5% of your income, everybody across the country. No. The way the Constitution originally read was that they had to collect taxes indirectly. And otherwise, each state was responsible for a portion of the taxes to be collected, and then it was up to the state to collect that from the actual individuals. And that was based upon the proportion of people and the proportion of representation they had in Congress. So, for example, if a particular state had 10% of the members of Congress belong to one state, that state was then responsible for 10% of the taxes to be collected. Federal government didn't have a say on how it was done, but they were basically sent the bill to the states, and then the states were responsible for collecting it and paying the taxes to the federal government. This changed somewhat and for the longest time, the federal government didn't really even try taxing the American people. They made all of their income through excise taxes. Then the Civil War kicked off. Well, in Civil War, okay, we need money to fund this war against the South. So at that point, that was the first time that they started to claim income taxes. But those taxes were ended in 1870 after the end of the Civil War. Later on, the government says, well, we want to lower these excise taxes, primarily because they wanted to lower the cost for raw goods, for raw materials being imported into the country that was then being made into other products. They wanted to make that more affordable for the manufacturers and for the people, so they didn't want to tax the imports of those raw materials anymore. Well, you still have to pay the bills. So they said, okay, you know what we're going to do is we're going to offset that by an income tax. Now, keep in mind that when they first rolled out this income tax, this income tax was specifically set for income for items such as interest, rent, income from an inheritance. But so this income tax was now directly on the people, not through the states. Well, when they passed this law, there was a lawsuit that soon followed called Pollock, Farmers Trust, and Loan Company. Basically, Pollock had, I believe it was 10 shares of from this loan company, and when they passed this law, the loan company basically said, we are not going to collect taxes on this income, but we're going to give you all the information so you can go after these people directly. And one of these people were Pollock, who then turned around and sued Farmers Loan and Trust Company to prevent them from doing so. Well, the Supreme Court came back in a 5-4 decision and ruled that, you know what, this income tax, the way this is being structured, is a direct tax on the American people and is against the Constitution. So basically, they eliminated the federal government from being able to tax directly this way, or which was in line with the Constitution. So therefore, after that, Congress decided, okay, if we're going to get this income back, we're going to need to change the Constitution. And then that's what created the 16th Amendment, which allowed them to directly tax the people. Now, a little earlier, I mentioned about how libertarians, everybody says we need to get rid of the 16th Amendment. A lot of them don't realize that before the 16th Amendment, they still had income tax. Again, it was built through the states. If you got rid of the 16th Amendment today, that is basically the same thing that would happen is they would still tax income, but they would basically require it from the states. They would send the states their bill, and now that state would be required to pay their portion of the of it, depending on what their representations in Congress was. So just the repeal of the 16th Amendment would not necessarily get rid of our issue with income tax. It should also be acknowledged that when they first did the income tax for the Civil War, the cutoff was the equivalent of $140,000 of today's tax dollars, or today's dollars. So when they first started taxing your income, or the income to pay for the Civil War, the only people that were taxed were those making the equivalent of $140,000 a year. So a wide majority of the Americans at that time, it didn't really affect. It only affected those who were making the most money. And, of course, we see what it's like today, where these progressive tax rates have gotten lower and lower, and more of us are paying. But But it's the 16th Amendment that has allowed Congress to be able to go in there and directly tax our incomes. Now, one of the big issues that they had, believe it or not, when they with the way that the direct tax was going, when it was being when you were being taxed on your on interest and rents, it had the effect of taxing property. Because the only thing they were taxing, they weren't taxing your labor. Your labor was yours. You got to keep anything that you made by working. They basically were taxing your property. Okay, this property is making the income. That's what we're taxing. Your money on interest was making income, not you. That's what they were taxing. They were basically taxing the property rather than the income. And that's what caused a lot of heartburn, because why? Who owned property? The affluent owned the property. So it was a matter of the people who had that property were the ones who, of course, were raising Cain. It was not the people who were out there actually busting their rear ends to make money to pay their bills, because that money was not being taxed. It was a tax very specifically set up by progressives to tax the rich, those who had money that they could invest. So that's a little bit about the 16th Amendment and the primary case that set those wheels in motion. And the tax that we were talking about was called the Wilson-Gorman Tariff Act, is what created that income tax provision that Pollock versus Farmers Loan and Trust shot down. But it should be, again, noted that the Supreme Court, when they did shoot that income tax down, did not hold that all income taxes were unconstitutional, but rather that the income taxes on rents, dividends, and interest alone were direct taxes and thus had to be done by apportionment. It's kind of, again, that's one of those interesting concepts that when you hear a lot of people talk about getting rid of the 16th Amendment and the government can't tax you, well, that's not entirely true. The same Supreme Court that shot down those income tax on those items did stipulate that income taxes as a whole were constitutional, just not those that were direct due to them being on basically towards property rather than towards the population.
So what do you think that about the Federal Reserve being created shortly after that was ratified, 1913. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, man. It's one of those things. I don't know if you want to get me started. The Federal Reserve.
Yeah, we got time.
I mean, the Federal Reserve system is just, it's a mess, okay? I mean, You've got the Federal Reserve. Let's face it. I mean, they're not actually. People don't realize the Federal Reserve is not actually federal, and it's not actually a reserve of bank. It's not. But it's more is a system created as you said, the very end of 1913, and the reason this was created was primarily due to a bunch of financial panics, and it made people concerned about the monetary system. But the thing is, after each panic we had after the origination of the Federal Reserve, the Federal Reserve got more and more responsibilities and powers in response to every financial difficulty basically the country went into after that, such as the Great Depression.
The Federal Reserve is owned by like the Rothschilds and J.P. Morgan and like families like that. It's like a big banking cartel, basically.
And basically, to an extent, that's exactly what it is. Again, there is no central. The Federal Reserve establishes policies. And now they also have the power of regulating the banks. The Federal Reserve are the ones who come back and determine what bank interest rates are going to be, or what the overnight rates of the major banks loaning to each other are going to be.
Right, and that's what when you hear like the Feds are going to raise the interest rate. That's not the federal government doing that. That's the Federal Reserve.
Correct.
So that should show you how much power they have in our system, as far as you know, telling the banks or you know having the banks raise interest rates and or lower interest rates and what you know what lets them or allows them to do that. Why? How did they gain so much power? And basically take it away from our federal government because we were in debt. And now, if I'm correct, correct me if I'm wrong, Bull, part of the reason the Federal Reserve, and I think you touched on it a little bit, but weren't we bankrupt in the late 1800s? The United States was actually bankrupt?
I mean, we're pretty close, because remember, this was after the, we spent a lot of money and borrowed a lot of money to fight the Civil War.
And then the
so
World War II came
we
along.
Bankrupt, but we were definitely in debt.
But we didn't have an income tax per se. I mean, we had tax, but not like the official income tax until World War II. Am I correct on that? Because we had to finance World War II.
No, you're not. Actually, they did do an income tax during the Civil War.
Well, no, I mean after the Civil War, when they ended that income tax, they ended it for a brief period of time. I thought, and I might be wrong.
They ended it in 1870. Is when they ended the. But then again, they started in 1994. 1894. They attempted to impose an income tax again. That is what Pollock got thrown out.
Right, and that's when the Supreme Court said, no, that's unconstitutional. Income tax is unconstitutional.
Right.
And even
and
today there's
after,
argument about it.
Yeah, and then after the 16th Amendment is, then they started to roll out income tax once again in line with the 16th Amendment.
Now, I want to bring up this. So I heard this conspiracy theory, and I know I've got a whole different show for that, but I got to bring this up because it involves the 16th Amendment. It involves the Feds, the Federal Reserve, and when it was created. You know, the Titanic sank in 1912, and supposedly, now, I'm not telling you this. You'll have to go look this all up. I just heard through stuff that I'm researching, but supposedly – They all met, all these big bankers, and wanted to start the Federal Reserve. And there was a portion of them that were against it. They said, no, we don't want to be involved. And on the morning, like literally minutes before the Titanic was, and I'm not going to get into the whole conspiracy theory about the censorship and all that, but I'm just going to say this. A few minutes before the Titanic was to set sail, the bankers that were against the central banking system had already boarded the ship and were there, and the ones that wanted the central banking system all bailed at the last minute. J.P. Morgan, Rothschild, and there's a handful of other ones. All bailed at the last minute before the Titanic took off. Now, again, you go look this stuff up. It's just something that I ran across. I'm like, man, if that's true, holy Moses, that's pretty huge. But it's no, it seems no coincidence that they finally ratified it in 1913, shortly after the Titanic sank, and then shortly after that, the Federal Reserve was created. It's like, I mean, it sure makes sense, but who knows? You really have to dig into it to find out for sure. Just wanted to throw that little tidbit in there. I thought that was kind of an interesting little piece of information if it turns out to be true.
I don't know if it's true or not. It would not necessarily surprise me. Again, mostly that's just because, I mean, anything that involves government and stuff like this, I mean, they've all got a lot of rumors that go around it. But, it would not surprise me at all.
So, what do you think, like, the Libertarian Party wants to get, you know, repeal the 16th Amendment. And it's obvious that, you know, we need taxes to, you know, for infrastructure and whatever.
Right.
And through the years, like, okay, so I've seen where some of our money went. I don't remember if this was a year, maybe 6 months, a year, 2 years ago, whatever it was. But something like on the lines of $20 billion went to Pakistan for gender studies. Now,
yep.
Doesn't it in there, like, it has a provision in the Constitution as far as where they can spend our money. Like, all this money going to Ukraine, now all this money going to Israel. And I did see that the new speaker, Mike Johnson, that agreed with $14.6 billion to send to Israel in the bill that he wrote up, or the plan that he wrote up. But they're going to take $14.6 billion away from the IRS funding. So, I don't know. I get all this, where do you appropriate the money? How do you appropriate? What's okay and what's not okay? I think we just haven't been paying attention, haven't been for long enough.
Well, the problem is the Constitution gives that blank check to Congress. Now, and again, part of the checks and balances with the original authors were the fact that Congress had the ability to spend this money, but it was up to the states to be able to collect it. That's why they had to go through their representatives had to vote for it, and it was done. It's supposed to be done apportioned to the number of people and number of representatives they had in Congress. But we've gotten to the point where over the years, through various amendments, this is basically so many of these checks and balances have been eliminated. But the truth of the matter is, it's mine and your congressmen who are responsible for this.
Yeah, people want to blame one party or the other. They've been doing it to us for years, both parties.
Oh, by all means.
Yeah, like George Carlin always said, it's one big club and you're not in it.
Yeah.
So, but when you want to blame one party or the other, or, you know, my party's not doing that, no, they've all been doing it to us. And,
well,
you know, you may hear me say something, oh, these darn Democrats or whatever, but it's not just Democrats. It's the both parties that are in control. Not to mention that the Federal Reserve has become so powerful that there's people in the background, bureaucrats that are in certain areas of our government that are being bought off by big banking and lobbyists.
Yep.
And they, if you look at some of these people that have paid taxes. Let's bring up Donald Trump. Income tax, $500 for 1 year. Multi-billionaire. $500 is all he paid. You know, but that's the tax code that they have set up. And even Trump himself has said that. playing by your rules, basically. It's not fair to the little guy.
No, because we can't find all of the loopholes. We can't afford the lawyers whose only job is to reduce our tax bills, figure out ways around it. That's one of the reasons why when I ran for Congress, I wanted to go back to a flat tax, to some base, a flat sales tax. Everybody, if you buy something, guess what? You're going to pay your share of taxes. You're going to pay so much, but there is no way around it. If you buy it, you buy it. I mean, the only exceptions were food, housing, stuff like that. But anything else you spent money on, a portion of that would have went to the taxes. But your income would have been yours. There would have been no taxes on your income. So basically, if you decide to come out here and get, you know what, I'm going to be self-sufficient. I'm going to make my own food. I'm going to make my own housing. I'm just not going to participate in the economy as a whole. Guess what? None of your money ever would have went to taxes because you weren't spending any of that money on other items. That was part of my tax plan when I ran. Because let's face it, the income tax system, the way it is always going to be subject to dishonesty. I mean, they're always going to find ways to hide money they've made. They're always going to be a underground economy that's not going to pay their portion of it. I mean, it's just – but my whole argument has always been if we don't want the government taxing us and taking our money, we have to prevent the government from spending our money. We don't have a revenue problem in this country. We have a spending problem in this country. We bring in quite a bit of money from taxes, from tariffs, everything like that. But our problem is spending. By sending billions of dollars to countries that we don't necessarily have a responsibility to. I mean, I know I'm going to risk being called an anti-Semite for saying this, but where exactly is our treaty that says we have to pay for Israel's defense? At what point can we not criticize another country's government because then we're considered anti-Semites, but we can criticize our own? At what point did a government become the symbol of a religion where you can no longer criticize, or if you fail to protect that government, then you are against this religion? When exactly did that occur? I had a breakfast with a buddy of mine this morning, and it was something that we had talked about. But the catch is, we are in debt as a country. Our credit cards are maxed. That's why we're at this mythological debt limit that we talk about. Basically, when your credit cards are maxed, you stop spending. You have to. As a country, we need to do the same thing. We need to stop incurring further debt by giving our tax dollars to other countries. I mean, and yes, I somebody will come back and say, well, the amount of money we give in foreign aid is relatively small compared on the overall big picture. And I agree. It is relatively small on the big picture. Therefore, it's the best place to start. Start with something small. Let's start eliminating that and just start working our way to bigger issues. But what people don't understand and they don't fully comprehend, we talked a little bit earlier about the Federal Reserve Bank. The Federal Reserve Bank is all about keeping the country's and economy strong And how do they gauge what our economy is doing? They gauge our economy by the gross domestic product, by how much companies are producing in this country, how much goods are being produced by companies, by organizations. That's what they care about. They care about business. They don't care about what our poverty levels are. They don't care about how many people are hungry or on the street. All they care about is, are we continuing to produce more and more goods that are funding our companies and our corporations? That's what they care about. They care about the businesses. The reason I just brought this up again is if you really took a look at our foreign military, our foreign aid, specifically our foreign military aid, our foreign military aid often doesn't actually go to these other countries. Our foreign military aid is actually going back to American military industrial complex companies that are then providing the weapons of war to these countries. Why? Because we don't really care about these countries. What we care about, again, are these American corporations. This is their way of laundering money. It is their way of making sure these companies who America uses for their own defensive weapons never go out of business. They want to make sure they're in business so that they're there to create our weapons of war if we ever need it. So they do this by continuing to feed them for producing weapons of war for other countries to kill each other. That is what foreign military aid is really about, is basically keeping our American weapons companies, our military industrial complex, functioning and rolling at full speed. And not enough American people really understand that. Yes, there's the things we really want to talk about, like the money going for gender studies in Pakistan or whatever. But where the money is really rolling into is either A, our military industrial complex, or even food aid is going towards our own farmers to ensure that they maintain a high market price for their goods, to continue to create demand for the goods to warrant the higher prices on grains. To ensure, because again, I mean, you need to make sure your farmers stay in business, otherwise our country could starve because we can't produce our own food. That is what all of these, that when you talk about the Federal Reserve and you talk about foreign military aid, the reality is these are all about protecting America's industries, protecting the corporations. So many of our tax laws are built, why, how? Again, to protect the corporations. When President Trump passed this big tax cut a number of years ago when he was president, There were two phases or two portions of these income tax cuts. One was for the corporations, and one was for the American people, the individuals. Guess which tax cuts were permanent? The tax cuts to the corporations. The tax cuts to the American people had a sunset date. And otherwise, after 10 years, those tax cuts go bye-bye. We go back to the higher tax rates, but the corporations' tax rates were set in stone saying, no, these are permanent. These don't go back up unless we change the law to make them go back up. So, I mean, so much of our government and the funds of our government is based towards corporations. Now, their thought process is, hey, we got to keep these companies in business. We got to make sure they're making money because they're the ones who are employing the American people. And the American people are like, yes, yes, please. We got to keep make sure they don't fail because they're giving us our jobs. American people don't realize that, guess what? If these companies fail, that produces an opportunity for you to fill that gap, the American people to fill the gaps created by these companies failing. because those products are still going to need to be produced by somebody. So basically all that does is keeps the people with money, keeping them with money, and keeping us, the American people, working for them. Because, again, they go with this thought process of too big to fail. We can't let these big companies fail because it'll hurt the economy. Yes, it'll hurt the economy briefly, but guess what? Something better will rise to take its place, and they will continue to improve because they will have been better than the company that failed. But we no longer allow that. That, my friend, is why America is no longer leading in many of the technological fields. That's why China and these other countries have caught up to us. That's why our schools are not the best that they used to be. Because we have basically allowed for mediocrity to stay in place by protecting it. And that's my soapbox for tonight.
Well, it was a good one. I mean, it's when people understand the whole system and why it's created and how it's created, it'll open your eyes to a lot of things. One second here. I wanted to add something, too, is you see all these politicians that get into office, and they're there for a term, and then they're there for two terms, and then three and four and five and all, whatever, all the way up. I was reading an article here. This has been a few months back when the whole Liz Cheney thing was going on during the elections. And I read an article where she went from her net worth being $9 million to over $40 million in 7 years that she was in office. And I want you to think, now I'm not just picking on Liz Cheney, which I'm picking on her too, but because it's both parties. It's not just one party. And that's, I think that's what we need to really get back to, is understanding that the two-party system was to keep us divided. The two-party system is to continue to keep us divided for as long as they control power. And the media is in on it. Whether you watch CNN or you watch Fox, whatever, it doesn't matter which side you're on. They're going to tell you what you want to hear as a conservative or as a Democrat. That's just what the media does. That's their job. And if you don't think that the media is working together with our government and vice versa, I don't know what to tell you. You've really got to pay attention to stuff, because if you watch, because I used to be one of those guys that leaned toward the left. I was more liberal, or not liberal, libertarian, but I leaned toward the left. And as I was watching and observing things, I'd watch Fox News, and then I'd watch CNN or MSNBC, or I'd go back and forth. And I couldn't believe how they cater to their audience and how smooth they are with it. And then, you know, that's when I met Bull, and the Constitutional Republic Party was created, and I thought, you know what? I like this. I like it that it's guys just like me, well, men and women just like me, that are tired of the two-party system. They're tired of the other, you know, the parties that are out there that can't seem to get a foothold, and I don't know what the deal is either with some of them. I'm sure you got an opinion or thoughts on that, Bull, which I'd love to hear, but the whole point of the Constitutional Party is to bring us back to the original Bill of Rights. The Constitution has been tampered with. You know, when you hear Joe Biden coming out and saying, the Second Amendment is not absolute. Well, he means that. They think the whole Constitution is not absolute because they've been allowed to change it throughout the years to fit whatever they need from the people rather than what the people, what it was intended for, to control the government, to keep the government small. We don't need a federal government that is as large as it is. We need to downsize a lot of areas. This is just my opinion. So, I mean, what are your thoughts on that, Paul?
I mean, I agree completely. I mean, the government has grown to something that our founding fathers would never have recognized. The government was never meant to have the control that it currently does. Okay, I mean, it was meant to be a government for individuals, not for the corporation that it's the corporations that is primarily meant to serve now. I mean, if you look at our government primarily serves corporations. I mean, you look at our lobbyists, the people who are in there talking to our congressmen, who are helping our congressmen write laws. Do I have lobbyists up there? Do you? No. These companies and these corporations or these industries do. They're the ones who have the ears of our congresspeople, not us. I mean, we're just one or two individual votes. Those guys are millions of dollars, which will buy millions of votes. I mean, that's what's happened to our government. I mean, when they changed the law, when they changed the way the Senate was formed, and we're going to get into that in a couple weeks, to make where the Senate was also elected by the population, by the people, rather than being appointed by the states, which was the original intent. Again, all you did at that point was you put these senators on corporate payroll because those are your donors who are going to help them get elected. That's how we lost control, is because we allow these corporations the ability to manipulate our public officials to their own benefit and often to our detriment. I was reading an article a couple days ago that struck close to home, and this gives you an example. This is on Samsung refrigerators, to be specifically. Anybody who follows me on Facebook knows that last year I had a major issue with a Samsung refrigerator. Basically, we bought a new refrigerator 3 or 4 years ago, and it was basically to the point it wasn't keeping our food cold anymore. And this is a 3 or 4 year old refrigerator. Basically, there was getting condensation in it, and the back end of it was freezing. And ice was building up in any of the ports that were used to blow cold air into the refrigerator, so it wasn't working. And as that turns out, this has been a problem Samsung has known about for ages. And it's actually been causing a lot of illnesses because people don't realize that the refrigerators are not keeping things as cold as they were supposed to be keeping it cold, and people are getting sick. Well, why isn't there been some sort of information? Because you have a whole bureau that Liz Warren take pride and credit in, the Consumer Protection Bureau. Why haven't they put something out? Why haven't they put out a recall on this? Because people are getting sick because the refrigerators are failing in a short amount of time. Why isn't something being done about this? And it's because the Consumer Protection Bureau actually has to negotiate with the companies on the wording of any kind of recall or warning. They can't just put something out going, hey, we found this to be an issue, be buyer beware. No, they're not allowed to do that unless the companies basically agree to it. So we have given the companies basically veto authority over this Customer Protection Bureau, who is supposed to be protecting me and you, the actual customers, the actual people who are buying these products. Okay, we're spending all this money on this bureau through our tax dollars that we may or may not agree with to begin with, and then they're not even allowed to really do their job without the corporation's permissions. What the hell? When I read that, I saw on there that basically that the Customer Protection Bureau has to actually negotiate with the company on any recalls that are issued or any warnings that they put out. It's kind of like, at what point did we put the prisoners in charge of the asylum?
And that's what it is, too.
It is. I mean, they... Which is one of the reasons why I've long said that. I mean, one of the other issues that I ran on, that I campaigned on, was that I wanted Congress to pass a law that basically stated that corporations were not entitled to constitutional protections. That corporations are an artificial entity, and therefore are not protected by the constitutional protections that are towards natural or entities like people, which is well within Congress's scope of being able to do that. But they haven't. So what do they do is they leave it up to the Supreme Court to decide. And Supreme Court has basically said, you know what, if Congress hasn't said any different, then we're just going to have to err on they get the same protections as any American. Which we should not have left that up to the Supreme Court. I mean, Congress should have passed that law, because you know what? If they pass that law, you know what it would overturn? It would overturn Citizens United, which is what opened the door to corporations being able to pour all this money into our political system. That's what it would take to fix campaign finance reform, is one simple law stating that corporations are not entitled to constitutional protections, period. Because you know who invented corporations? The United States, the government. So the government has every right to basically set the rules for the corporations. If you want to be a corporate entity, they can set those, because they're the ones who invented them. So, but every time they say, well, we can't just do that, yes, you can. You just don't have the political willpower, because it means turning off the spigot to the money you have coming in from these corporate backers or from these owners of these corporations. That's who your puppet masters are.
Well, I wanted to touch on something about, you know, these lobbyists that go into Washington and D.C. with literally millions and millions of dollars, and
yep.
These congressmen and senators are receiving all sorts of lavish gifts, and why the American people can't get heard anymore. I am living proof of that. I've been to 3 state capitals. I've been to D.C. And when you show up in numbers and you show up in force, they tend to listen to you a little bit more because they know you're pissed.
Yep.
So the only time we really got anything accomplished was when we went to D.C. in 2020 and we sat on Constitution Avenue for 3 straight weeks, and we had hundreds of trucks roll in and out of there in those 3 weeks. You know, they'd,
yep,
some would stay for 3 days, some stayed for 3 weeks, but we occupied basically Constitution Avenue. Now, were we peaceful? Absolutely.
Yep.
That we left the place cleaner than when we got there. We were kind. We were nice. Hell, we grilled out right along the curb and invited Secret Service to come over, and they come over and had, you know, hot dogs or bratwurst or whatever we were cooking.
Yep.
But that's how you protest, and that's how you get things done. You don't go and burn cities down. You don't go and commit violence or any of that. You get a group of people that are like-minded, and you go and you sit and you tell the government, hey, we are here to get our grievances heard. And you do it peacefully.
You know what? And I'm going to play devil's advocate for a moment. And I want to preface this by saying I am not encouraging this. I am not stating do this. But all I am pointing out is that when these people do riot, when these people do cause all this damage, and they start affecting businesses, all of a sudden things start to happen. Because it has started, even your protest, y'all went up there for 3 weeks and y'all started to get stuff done because y'all were pissed. But you know what? What did it do to the businesses of D.C. when y'all shut down Constitutional Avenue? Did it really start affecting their business?
No, it didn't start affecting people's money. And I see where you're going with this, and I actually agree with you. When you start affecting the economy and bit people's money, corporations especially. Now, let me just say this. We've talked, I've been in numerous talks through the last 6 years, and
yep.
There's been talks of shutdowns and this and then blocking roads, and I've never been an advocate of blocking roads. I don't like to block anybody's free will of travel. That's not fair to me.
Nope.
It's not fair for them, I should say. I've always wanted to do things the peaceful way, and according to what the Constitution states, we have a right to peacefully assemble. Now, here's the thing. I've been involved with way more slow rolls than I have been going to capitals. What a slow roll is, is when you get a group of trucks together and you go the minimum speed limit on the interstate with your signs on your trucks and your flags and what have you. And the criticism we received just over that, oh, you're blocking roads. No, we were single file with enough space in between us where cars could safely enter or exit the freeway. But people don't want to understand what you're trying to accomplish because it doesn't affect them. So what Bull is saying, and I happen to agree with, sometimes you got to affect, I don't want to say people, but you have to affect corporations. When the back pocket is starting to feel the crunch, the corporations tend to say, okay, what do you want? What do we got to do here to remedy the situation?
And so they start putting that pressure on the politicians to solve it or to make it go away. Not solve it, just make it go away for now. And I hate to say it, but I mean, what politicians need to understand, and I think everybody needs to understand, is when you stop listening to us, when you stop taking our phone calls, you no longer have time for us. We feel that the only way to get you to listen is to make you listen by these other actions. These other actions are never somebody's first choice. No, violence and destruction, that's not most people's first choice. That is a sign of desperation. Of, you know what? I have nothing else to lose at this point. If I go to jail for breaking the law, what have I lost? Because I've already lost everything. That's that point where when people are doing that, I think people need to come to the understanding of people who do these things are at that point where they feel they really have nothing else to lose. That is what I feel, and I'm about to open up a whole new can of worms, so beware. That is what enabled Hamas. That is what enabled them to grow their ranks. Is you had so many Palestinians who were desperate, who were broke, who couldn't feed their families, who were their travel was restricted, who were prohibited from getting jobs in the Israeli economy because they were Palestinians, whose tax dollars that they paid to Israel was being withheld because Israel was not happy with something that the Palestinian government had done. That is where organizations like Hamas can come in, and it's right picking for them. That's how they grow their ranks, is people are so desperate, they have nothing else to lose, join us, and we will teach those bastards a lesson. That's how they grow their ranks. That's what caused what's going on right now.
And what happens with that is
that.
Innocent people are the ones that get hurt over this. Innocent people.
Yeah.
Rather than the government policies that have created this mess, it's always innocent. You look at the Hamas coming in and taking hostages and shooting innocent people at a concert. They didn't have nothing to do with anything.
No.
But they wanted to prove their
Hamas
point.
Hamas is an evil organization. Okay, I want to put straight out. Okay. They are absolute evil. But they were allowed to grow by bad policies. They allowed that organization to turn into what it turned into by feeding it, by not taking care of the people. And that's the same thing that happened across this country, is when things get so bad, will get when things get so. I mean, I'll throw another example out there real quick. Central America, where the poverty is so bad that the drug cartels become the biggest employer, and guess what? They pay well. They take care of the people. They're an evil organization, but they give the people what the government was not providing for them. They provided them with security. They provided them with safety. They provided them with food. And they basically took the responsibilities that the government was not taking care of. And now look what they've turned into. They've got these huge cartels that are basically untouchable because governments basically did not take care of their own people. And they enabled these cartels to grow by doing what they weren't doing. And that's the same thing Hamas did. Hamas grew by taking care of the people that the Israeli government ignored and shunned. And this is what it's created.
And that's why it's so important to be an informed voter. Now, not that I can sit here and tell you I know everything about everything, because I am far from it, I promise you that. But I pay attention, like constantly pay attention. Who's voting for this? Who's voting for that? Who's backing this? Who's backing that? I refuse to vote for somebody that is going to hurt us as a whole. Or help me just individually and screw the rest of the people. I don't want to be a part of that. I want to be a part of a group of people that are wanting to see us all succeed, regardless if you have a D or an R in front of your name, or a C at this point, Constitutional Republic Party. That's why I joined this organization, and I believe after talking with Bull, you know, numerous times, I believe in what his message was and what his ideas were, and I think he's onto something. Now it's trying to convince the population that you've been lied to for many, 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 many years, and it's not about, they tell you everything you want to hear, but they, at the end of the day, they've proven with their actions, both parties, that they don't care about you. What in your life is so fantastic right now that you can go and say, yeah, I've got a yacht, and unless you're rich, unless you're part of a corporation, or you got lucky along the line. But there's a lot of guys like me. I work a lot of hours. Bull works a lot of hours. We just get by, and we live our life. But there's a lot of people out there, and I know this firsthand, that they're not even living paycheck to paycheck. They're living paycheck to two days before paycheck or 3 days before paycheck. I just picked up a friend of mine the other day that was walking 2.5 miles back from work after she worked an 8-hour day at McDonald's. And I thought to myself, on your feet all day long, and you got to walk 2.5 miles home, how miserable that's got to be, and especially with winter coming up. And I said, well, what's going on? She said, well, my van broke down, and I don't have the money to fix it, and they think it's this or that. And, well, I happen to have a friend that's a mechanic, and I'm waiting to hear back from her, so there's maybe we can work out something where we can get her van in there, get it fixed so she at least has a vehicle to drive back and forth to work. But that's how bad there's a lot of people out here. And you think, well, to tell her to get a better job if she's working at McDonald's. And she's like a manager at McDonald's. So it's not like she has a bad job. You know, that stipulation we put on people that you have to be this or that in order to be successful in life. Well, listen, there's a lot of people that work fast food their whole life and were fine. They worked themselves up into a management role or what have you. So let's quit judging people for where they work at, and let's start caring about each other as far as you can watch people struggle. You know that they work their butts off. Nobody that works, you know, at least 40 hours a week, if not 60, shouldn't have enough money to at least get their vehicle fixed when it breaks down. And when you look at the percentage of how many people in this country, if they had a $1,000 bill or more, they wouldn't be able to afford it at this point. I can't remember what the number was. Maybe you got that number, Bull, but I seen that here not too long ago, and it's astounding. It's
yep.
Actually disturbing. So we need to help each other vote better and educate each other to vote better. And forget about these, you know, Democrat or Republican. Oh, you're going to get a Republican in there. They're just going to screw it. You know, listen, there's not one in there in right now that has done an astronomical job helping the American people. That's a fact. And I'm sorry to break it to you that way, but and I'm not trying to be rude or go against what you believe in, but you have to look at the bottom line and look around you and pay attention. That's all I'm going to say about that. But what did you want to add to that, Bull?
No, I mean, I think you hit it right on the head. I mean, there are a lot of Americans right now, and you know what? When we're so worried about how we're going to make ends meet, we don't have time. The politicians know if they keep us at that level, we don't have time to get involved in politics. We're too busy trying to figure out how are we going to feed our families. How are we going to make this work? How are we going to get our kids educated? If we're all too busy worrying about how we're going to survive, then we're not getting involved in politics, and they don't have to worry about us. We'll vote the way we've always voted because we don't take the time to learn anything new or learn about that we have better options because we are so worried about surviving. That's how they want us. They don't want us prospering where we actually have time to research and start asking the questions they don't want us to ask. If we're too busy worrying about surviving, then they don't worry about us asking those hard questions on how exactly did you go from being a normal guy to a multimillionaire within two or three terms in Congress. They want to keep us too busy to ask those questions. They want to be able to keep us blind to the fact that they're making policies that they know are going to benefit certain companies that they then turn around and invest in because they have the inside information that this is going to benefit what companies, and then they turn around and put their money into it. That's how they get rich. That's money that's not easy to trace, like if they're taking risk flat out kickbacks from a company, but all of a sudden if they buy get stock in that company and that company does extremely well all of a sudden because of policies that they set up, they want us too busy to be able to look up stuff like that. And don't get me wrong, it is not just our politicians. The more information that's been coming out lately about certain people who have close relationships with members of the Supreme Court, who have provided these justices of the Supreme Court with all type of benefits, when these justices are going to be ruling on cases that have a direct or indirect impact on them or what they believe. There is, we talk about corruption in these third world countries. We talk about corruption in Ukraine. But damn it, we just have to look at our own government. It's so rife with corruption, and we keep reelecting them. We don't change them out. Politicians like oil; they need to be changed every 3,000 miles. Okay, get rid of them. Put new ones in there. The guys who are in there now, the longer they're in there, the more they learn how to work the system, milk the system to their own benefit and our detriment. Get their asses out. Get the political parties out who have their own agendas that don't necessarily match the agendas of the American people, of the individuals.
Look at Mitch McConnell. I mean, he's asking for another $67.7 billion for Ukraine. It's like, when does that fountain of money stop? And so everybody's like, oh, well, we know he's a rhino. So he's a Republican establishment. That it happens on both sides, guys. That's what I'm trying to tell you. You know, I know a lot of your representative, but
you see the same Republicans who are yelling about money for Ukraine, falling over themselves to write money to Israel. Okay, I mean there is no principles involved.
No.
It's just a matter of who they're sending the money to. That's the only difference between the parties. is who benefits?
You know, when you were running for Congress, and even now, when we started the campaign of the Constitutional Republic Party, you're just taking a vote away from the Republican Party.
Yep. And I heard it all the time. You're just trying to screw the Republican Party. No, I'm not directly trying to screw the Republican Party. That's just a fringe benefit. I mean, we're trying
to
show people.
No, we're trying
to
help the American people.
Exactly. And that's what they're scared of. If the American people actually realize they have options, they have choices. It's not a choice of the lesser of the two evils. You can vote non-evil.
I tweeted out the other day.
But you're so worried that the worst evil will win if you do.
I said, listen, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to make a bold statement. The Republican Party is they're not doing anything to help the American people right now. They're all too scared to stand up to the corruption going on in D.C., probably because a lot of them are involved in it. I mean, there's more than enough evidence now to see the border crisis was planned by and being perpetrated on us by Mayorkas as part of it. Why hasn't his feet been held to the fire? Biden, I mean, all the evidence that's coming across Biden, I'm not trying to pick on just so Stu because there's evidence of everybody, a lot of evidence about corruption. But I said, let me make a bold statement. Why don't we replace the Republican Party with the Constitutional Republic Party, with the Constitutional Republic Party values? Back
give us
to
a
our
fresh
roots.
Start.
Yeah. Watch what we can do. And I guarantee you, you're going to see heads turn in D.C. Mm-hmm. because what's one of the things you wrote in the bylaws? Term limits. Oh, what?
Yep.
Yeah. And guess what? Special interest money? Not happening.
Because, you know, if you have term limits, it's a lot harder for those lobbyists to build up those relationships that they take advantage of. Because after if we do 3 limits in the House or something, well, guess what? After those first 4 years, that money doesn't mean anything to that congressperson because he's getting out. He's done. And it lessens their hold on our politicians, which is why they'll never do it on their own. We have to force it.
And that's how you change the system from within, by taking a chance, taking a leap of faith and saying, you know what, those guys sound right. I think they are right. And maybe it's time that we do something different. The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. And it's only going to get worse from here on out if we don't change the system from within. It's just the bottom line, folks, unfortunately. It sucks.
Yeah.
Wow, we kind of turned a big corner there today, didn't we, Bull?
Yeah, we did.
Not bad,
though. I wish
we'd
had some callers, but I think I really enjoyed the show tonight. Even if I did kind of go off on some tangents there, I think these people have a definite know where I stand on issues.
Well, and that's what I think is important, that people understand where we stand on issues. We're not going to pussyfoot around, and we're not going to lie to you. We're not going to tell you what you need to hear or want to hear just to get a vote. We want your vote. Because we're telling you exactly who we are, what we are, and what we plan on doing.
Yep.
We're not in it for the money. If one day I happen to run for representative in my district or somewhere else.
Do it.
But if I did, I mean, obviously I got to have a salary to live, but I don't want to be a career politician. I don't want to chum up with these special interest money. Oh, but you look at all the nice houses you can. I don't need that. People that don't know me or don't understand me, I'm not materialistic. I just don't care. I want to see everybody do well. I want to see more smiles walking down the street rather than hanging heads, because that's what I'm seeing a lot of, and it's disturbing to me, and I don't like it. I want to see everybody do well. If you're willing to go out and work and have a full-time job and do your part, to be a productive member of society, then why should you have to suffer week to week just to make ends meet? That's not what life was intended for, to make everybody else rich while you suffer and eat scraps. Now, I'm not saying, do you deserve a yacht and a mansion? No, of course not. But you don't deserve to suffer by any means. And now I'm starting to sound like a far-left liberal, but and nothing against them. I just there's got to be a better way with a better system that we can create from within that will not only just help corporations, but it'll help the people, more importantly. That's just my thoughts. And maybe I'm just a dreamer. I don't know. But, hey, we went over our hour a little bit. We get into our rants and our soapboxes or whatever, and that's okay. It lets people know who we are as people and that we actually do care. You know, I might be a little rough around the edges. You might see me on social media, and I might throw the F-bomb out there here and there. But at the end of the day, I don't care who you voted for or what you vote for, who you are or what color skin you have. If you need help and I'm able to help you, I'm going to help you. And everybody that knows me personally knows that. So that's the bottom line. We got to do better. So what do you want to say to conclude the 16th episode of The Constitutionalist, Bull?
Well, I'd like to thank everybody for signing in and or for joining us tonight. If you haven't done so, come out and visit us on our webpage, constitutionalrepublicparty.us. Come learn a little bit about us. And if the mood strikes you, please join the party. I mean, we have memberships on there, the grassroots memberships, which don't cost you a dime. We do have some other memberships on there to help raise money for the party. We would love to have your input, okay? We can't do this alone. Numbers matter, okay? Bodies matter. If you're in a state where we don't have a presence yet, and you want to take that bull by the horn and say, you know what, we need this party in my state, we will help you along and we will make it happen. Contact us. Help us grow this party. Help us make a difference and save our country. Because honestly, folks, right now I'm scared. I am scared for our country, and it's up to us if we're going to change it. We don't need a fiscal revolution. We need a political revolution. And it's not going to happen with the two parties that are in control now. So please come out and join us. Thank you for letting us into your radios tonight. And I hope to see you all again soon. Thanks.
All right, everybody. That concludes the 16th episode of The Constitutionalist. Join us every Tuesday night at 6 p.m. Central Time as we do discuss the Constitution. And we kind of go off into other little areas of discussion. And that just so you can learn more about who we are and who Bull is as the chair and what our beliefs in. We believe in the Constitution and the original Bill of Rights and what the forefathers were trying to create for us. And we're really, really close to being absolutely successful, but that's neither here nor there. But anyway, ladies and gentlemen, thank you guys for joining us on The Constitutionalist, and we'll see you all next Tuesday night at 6 p.m. Central. Have a great week.